not a expository message, just a textual message, one verse this morning, which is verse 10 of our chapter in Second Corinthians chapter 12. I'll read it. He says, "Therefore, I take pleasure in infirmities, in reproaches." Notice that. I take pleasure in infirmities. What's that? Weaknesses. In reproaches, in necessities, in persecutions, in distresses for Christ's sake. For when I'm weak, then am I strong. Now, that is the key phrase in that verse. For means because. When I am weak, then am I strong. Now, I'd like to take that phrase, when I'm weak, then am I strong, and give you the title for the one-point message. I just have one point today in the message, and it's this: when you feel your weakness, you'll experience God's strength. When you feel your weakness, you will experience God's strength. Now, we preachers, we like to know that we have it together, that we have the message together, that we know what we're going to preach, we've studied it, we have it all prepared, and I'm no exception to the rule. But I will tell you, one of the things that is the hardest thing for me in the way I preach is, I've studied this book for over 50 years, but the hardest thing for me is, what do you want me to preach on today and right now for these people? And in my own commitment to God and the way God has led me, and I'm not saying every preacher has to do it my way, but I'm saying the way God has led me, I have to wait upon God. And he helps me to get that text. And I'm not going to tell you how all that is today, but I'm just going to say that that is the hardest thing for me to do. Why? Because it puts me in a position of weakness. Puts me in a position of vulnerability. I have to wait upon God. And then when he shows me, then I prepare and I work on that. But it is something that puts me in a position of weakness. And I'm thinking of another preacher. His name was Robert T. Ketchum, Robert Thomas Ketchum. He was a great preacher, a great Baptist preacher. And he said many times when he went into the pulpit and he felt like he was all prepared, he was ready to go, that's when he preached a peanut butter message. I call it a peanut butter message. It sticks to the roof of your mouth. You know, can't get it out. But when he went in there and he felt, I'm not quite prepared, I'm not quite ready, then he felt God's power. And can I say something today? What we're lacking today is preachers that have God's power. And there are different degrees of the power of God in a man's ministry. Some have more than others. And I say, on the whole, even those with the greatest power today do not measure up to those great preachers of the past. Don't even come close. And I think of Paul. He was not an orator. He was not a great speaker. He was not a great communicator at all. In fact, his speech was considered weak. But yet he said, when I was at Corinth, which is a very wicked city, he said, I was there in weakness. I was there trembling. I felt my weakness, and I was trembling because I was afraid. And yet he said the power of God was with him at Corinth as he just gave the simple message about Jesus Christ and the cross of Jesus Christ, and the results spoke for themselves. People got saved. Their lives were turned around. Where do we see that happening today? And I'm just saying to you that when I'm weak, then am I strong. And I'm saying to you, when you feel your weakness, that's when you're going to experience God's strength. But if you like I do, to showcase the strength of your temperament or the strength of your physical or the strength of your financial or whatever it is that you like to showcase, God will have nothing to do with linking up his strength with your strength. He is not interested to link up his strength with your strength. And that's what the Apostle Paul experienced here, and he's a prime example. I'll just read with you. Look at verse 7. He says, "And lest I should be exalted above measure through the abundance of the revelations." Good night. The man had more revelations, more new revelation of New Testament truth than any of the other apostles. He wrote more of the New Testament than any of the others. And I believe he wrote Hebrews as a young Saul of Tarsus. And then it became a treatise that had other things with it. But he was an amazing apostle in that he received so much divine special revelation directly from God. Good night. He spent 3 years. I know the other apostles spent it with Jesus, but he spent it with the risen Christ. 3 years in the wilderness there around Damascus. And he said he had so much truth that God had to humble him. And at one time he was stoned to death and he went to heaven, it appears. And then he came back, his soul came back in his body is what it looked like. And that was when he was in Lystra. And I'm just saying that God humbled him and made him go through reproaches, which are public shaming for what he was preaching and saying he would be publicly shamed. Infirmities, these are physical weaknesses that he went through. Necessities, where he didn't have money and he had to depend on God for money. Persecutions, where people followed him and went after him because he was giving the devil trouble. And distresses. You know, we go through these distressing situations. How many of you have in the past month gone through something that was distressing to you? Yeah. Our refrigerator went out. That's distressing. But you know what? I kind of learned to take pleasure in these things now. You say, why, Pastor? Because it goes against my natural grain. I like everything to go smooth. I got it all down. We got this together. We got it all planned out. You know, man proposes, but what? God disposes. We like to have it all together. I like to have it all together. But God says, no, I don't want you to have it all together, my friend. Because then you're going to depend on yourself. You're going to depend on your own natural strength. And I'm not interested in you. I'm not interested in your natural strength. I am interested in my glory. And so the very thing that you might not want is the very thing that you need this morning. You need to feel your weakness, so you can experience God's strength in your life. And the Apostle Paul says, "For this thing," verse 8, "I besought the Lord thrice that it might depart from me." I like it when preachers preach whole messages on this and try to tell you what the thorn was. I'm not going to do that. Because I believe it was left somewhat ambiguous so that everybody could relate to it. And there are different kinds of thorns in the flesh. If we read verse 7 for what it is, there are different kinds of thorns in the flesh. But I'm just saying it's from Satan. Do you know that God will allow Satan to bug you and to bother you? He certainly did the Apostle Paul. So that he would depend upon him and depend upon his strength. So he said, I'm going to embrace this. I asked God 3 times to remove it. Hey, I wonder how many of you listen to me this morning. I'm going to ask you a question. How many of you have something that you've asked God to get out of your life, to change in your life? You're just sick of it, this trial, and God hasn't done it. Raise your hand. The rest of you may be liars. Or you're just not wanting to share. I'm just saying to you, this is a common thing. And it's part of the par for the course for a believer. And you go through that thing, and Paul asked, and three times he asked, it wouldn't depart. So here's what he came up with. He said, and he said unto me, my grace is sufficient for thee. My strength is made perfect. Here's Paul's response to Jesus. Most gladly, therefore, will I rather glory in my infirmities, that the power of Christ may rest upon me. What is he saying? I'm gonna showcase my weakness. I'm gonna bring my weakness right out there. I'm gonna get vulnerable, and I'm gonna showcase my weakness, and I'm gonna embrace my weakness when it comes, and I'm gonna embrace reproaches when they come. Boy, I get reproaches when I'm out there. I have good times too, but I have reproach time. He said, I'm gonna embrace it. Because it humbles me. It weakens me. It makes me depend on God. And that's what you need. When you think you're close to God, when everything's going good, that's when you're farthest from God. That's what Dr. Wendell Kempton used to tell our methodical Bible study class as he gave us a devotional on the Psalms every morning. What a man of God he was. He said, you think everything's good. Your mountain is standing firm, and you're far from God because you've got it all together. No, you don't. So he said, I'm gonna embrace these things. And he says, verse 10, an amazing statement. Look at the beginning of verse 10. Therefore, I take pleasure in infirmities. That's weaknesses. In reproach, that's public ridicule for what he's doing. In necessities, that's financial need. I'm not talking about, I'm talking about necessities. Food, place to stay. Necessities, persecutions, distresses for Christ's sake. For when I'm weak, then am I strong. And I'm just saying that you need to want to feel physically strong. You want to feel physically strong and emotionally strong, but you need to feel your weakness, because when you feel your weakness, then you're going to experience God's power. My daughter Mindy experiences a lot of these kinds of things, and she's been a blessing to me. And she put a book on my desk. The other day, I actually had the autobiography of this man. And when I was in college, I read his entire autobiography, and I was really into him. His first name was David. And his last name was David Brainerd. And how many have heard of David Brainerd? How many have ever read his autobiography? Probably nobody here. But anyway, I really got into it, and I'd heard a lot about David Brainerd. David Brainerd was born in colonial America, and he was a brilliant individual. He was a good-looking young man in his 20s, very thin, and he was brilliant. And he would have graduated at the top of his class at Yale College. At that time, Yale College was part of the Ivy League schools, which featured training men to be preachers. They were amazing institutions. During that time, now they're not that. But David Brainerd suffered a wound, and he was an introspective, kind of a melancholy personality. And David Brainerd suffered a great wound, and his wound was that in Yale College, David Brainerd would have been the valedictorian of his class. He would have had the valedictory address. But he was a very godly young man that knew God. And one of his fellow students, probably a preacher, I was like that. I had preacher friends. We studied together. We talked together, theology, and we talked about professors. And he said to David Brainerd, he said, what do you think of this particular professor? And David Brainerd honestly said, I think he has about as much grace as this chair. And what he was saying is, he's dead spiritually. He doesn't really have grace in his life, and yet he's teaching preachers. That's all he said. He has about as much grace, I believe, as this chair. And that young man blabbed and told the administration. David Brainerd was called on the carpet and expelled from school. And he wasn't allowed to come back. David Brainerd was offered pastorates and great pastorates of these big New England churches. He refused them. He didn't take them. He believed that God wanted him to be a missionary to the American Indians. And there was a law lately passed in the American colonies that if a person was expelled from one of these premier colleges like Yale, Harvard, and these colleges, that they would not be allowed to be a missionary. And that happened to David Brainerd. And he felt the reproach, the public disgrace. His temperament felt it. And in tears, he could not deny God's call. He got on his horse and he rode out into the wilderness and he said, I'm going to be a missionary anyway. And he went out there and I've read, you know, parts of his autobiography where he said, oh, I got a place to stay. You know, he kept pressing on through the wilderness, couldn't find a place to stay. But I got a place to stay. It was some hut, and he stayed in that hut. Didn't have any food. And sometimes he'd have to fast for days before he'd find food. And then he'd get some food, and he would be out there. And David Brainerd would spend hours, listen to me, hours in the woods praying. And you know what he was praying for? Not like so many of us, our selfish things we pray for. He was praying for the power of God to get these Indians so that they would listen and be saved. And he didn't know their language, and they had different languages. And he finally got an interpreter, and that interpreter was kind of a drunkard, not even converted. And he would pray and pray until God broke through on him. And then he would speak and the interpreter would speak and there would be a melting among the Indians and they would turn to the Lord and get saved. He had an amazing ministry. This young man in his 20s, all alone out there. He had a nice family. He had a brother named John and other siblings and a beautiful family. He came, but he was all alone doing that. And he felt his weakness. And then I remember he was mentioning when graduation came and he could visualize himself speaking the Valor Victoria address there and his fellow students being there. But he couldn't be there and participate. He couldn't even have that comfort. He was reproached. It was all of God. Because probably no man... I had some men in my life, not just David Brainerd, but he was one of the guys that influenced me. And I believe he's still influencing people. This was in the 1740s, and now we're in 2020s. He is still influencing people. I was so glad my daughter put that on my desk. I read through the whole book, and I was touched by it. Because David Brainerd experienced the power of God. And he rode out into what is now the Delaware Water Gap. And he was preaching in Indian villages. And whole villages were turning to the Lord. And it was a great work of God. But David Brainerd, in the meantime, got weaker and weaker. And he had a cough, you know. He would be coughing out there as he was out there in the elements. And he would start coughing up blood. And he had what they called consumption, which today we would call tuberculosis. And he got weaker and weaker. But as he got weaker and weaker, God's power was working through his life and he was seeing great, great results in his ministry. Oh, would to God we would see that yes. kind of thing here today Amen. In America.
Yes.
Boy, I want to see America have the right president and the right people, as Brother Bob was talking, and I firmly want that. I would rather avoid going to jail for what I'm doing. I do believe that if Kamala and Walz somehow get in there, I will be put in jail. My opinion. And I'm just saying to you, I'm praying for that not to happen. But if we get what we want and we get peace and prosperity for some length of time, it won't be forever, but if we get it, what good is it if we have the kind of lame Christianity that we have today prevalent in America? It's sick. Jesus described it this way. You make me sick. That's what Jesus said. Read it in Revelation. What good is it? What good is it? It's no good at all. Oh, we want our bellies filled. We want our paycheck right. We want everything right. But what good is it? David Brainerd arises to speak to us of what we're talking about here. And finally, it got so bad. It got so bad that David Brainerd could not continue, and he heard about a very godly genius of a man who was the president of Princeton, University of Princeton, another Ivy League school. And this man was probably one of the greatest men in the history of America, was a leader of the Great Awakening, and his name was Jonathan Edwards. He had a wife named Sarah. He had a wonderful big family. And he would show hospitality and help people that would come to him. And David Brainerd stumbled into his house, and Edwards fed him and took care of him and helped him. And Edwards had a daughter named Jerusha. Beautiful name. If I knew this name, I would name my daughter Jerusha. I didn't think about it back then, but Jerusha was her name. She was 17 years of age, and she fell in love with David Brainerd. Literally in love with this guy who was dying of tuberculosis, coughing up blood, but he was a thin, very handsome young man, but she fell in love with him because she had the same heart as Brainerd had, a heart for God. Edwards himself, her father, said it. He said she was a most amazing girl. And she took upon herself to serve Brainerd, to take care of Brainerd, and just to watch out for Brainerd and to help him. And they took a trip to Boston. It took 4 days to do the trip. And the doctors were telling him, it's better if you keep riding your horse. That'll help with the consumption. So she was with him on that trip. They just grew so close. So close. But God was not going to ever allow them to be married, you see. And Brainerd, he said to her, I'm dying. Can you see me depart from you? Can you be apart from me? I'm dying. And she just kept serving him. At 29 years of age, in 1747, David Brainerd finally drew his last breath. He got his brother John to carry on his work. He loved John, and he carried on, and he left. Jonathan Edwards preached his message. And I believe when Jonathan Edwards preached, he was trying to comfort his daughter, Jerusha, because how disconsolate she was. And he preached the message, absent from the body, present with the Lord. And he said, though David Brainerd's body is here, David Brainerd is not here. He is with the Lord. He's conscious. He's enjoying the presence of God in the heavenly mansions. And he talked about that. Jerusha, 17 years of age, for all that she poured out her life to help David Brainerd, 4 months later, she died and went to heaven. Jonathan Edwards preached her message, and he talked about her being like a flower that was not cut, you know, that was not wilted. She just died. And her name, Jerusha, means inheritance. She didn't have all the things financially that Edwards could have given her. But she got his heart. She got his soul. And she got, and that's what her name means, to inherit, to take possession, to take possession. Jerusha was that, and Brainerd was like that. And when she died, Edwards had her buried next to David Brainerd. That's where she lies right now, if you went to their grave. I'm supposed to go to New England. I'm going to try to look for that. But they're not in the grave. Edwards knew that their spirits were together in heaven, their souls were together, that they would never be departed again. He believed in love even after death. Edwards did. I tell you that story because we want to feel strong. We don't want to go through weakness, but look at the impact of these lives. And when you feel your weakness, that's when you're going to experience God's strength. I mentioned our country, and we have a Revival Seekers prayer meeting Saturday, and I prayed with the men. And I came, after coming back from Philadelphia, I came to pray with the men. But I must confess, as I went to pray with the men, I felt my weakness that morning. And on the way back from Philadelphia, I noticed all of the signs that were talking about two people that were running for president and vice president. And the Harris campaign, her vice president signed a bill in Minnesota that allows aborted babies who live but are now legally allowed to die on the table when they're given no care. In the debate with Vance, he denied that, but fact-checking, that was true. Her VP partner, Harris's, was for putting tampons in boys' bathrooms in school. But she was for giving surgery to prisoners in jail and paying for them to try to change men into women and women to men. Her homeowner tax proposals and her green raw deal proposals are geared to crash our economy and bring in a Marxist communist type system. She's for getting rid of Social Security. You say, no, she's not. Well, she is. Here's why. She's the one that was put in charge of immigration over the border by Biden, and she let in as many as 20 million. 20 million people. 20 million people that cannot be sustained, that are not legal. And that will crash Social Security and everything else. And what I'm saying is that when I went back from Philadelphia and drove back, I looked at the houses in the inner city Philadelphia, and I saw Harris walls, Harris walls, Harris walls, Harris walls, Harris walls, Harris walls. And then I got to the suburbs, and I thought, surely now we'll see the other alternative. No, Harris walls, Harris walls, Harris walls, Harris walls, Harris walls, Harris walls. And you know what, Brother Bob? I felt weak suddenly. Weak. Like, wow. Like, wow. Is it going to happen again? Are the American people going to be so duped again? Blinded. Blinded. And I felt weak, but listen to me. I can embrace that weakness. Because when I hear discouraging news, I go back to God. Do you know the Bible says Abraham staggered not at the promise of God? When God promised him, you'll have a child, and he turned 100 years old and his wife was 90 years old, he was like, I'm weak, I can't do this, it's impossible. And he looked at the situation he was in, and then he looked at God and his promise, and God and his promise said, I'll do it. But the situation said, you're too weak, you can't do it. But he didn't keep staggering back and forth between his inability and God's promise. He let his weakness cause him to get a hold of God. And that's what I have to do with America. And God giving us more time in this country, the United States of America. So it was good for me to feel my weakness. And I came into that prayer meeting. Not only did I feel my weakness as far as the country and what I prayed for the country, but I felt my weakness as far as spiritually and the lack of revival and the lack of the power of God. And I felt that weakness. And I went into the prayer meeting like that. And I prayed very honestly and unburdened my heart to God and asked Him for His power. And the men were doing the same thing. And I went out of there and I started knocking on doors because we do our visitation. And right away I was able to sign up a new family for bus to come on the bus. Right away I got two teenagers that said they would come. Later on I was up in Oliphant and I was talking to a lady and she had a Puerto Rican background. Her daughter was like 18, but this lady had a Puerto Rican background and her name was Xenia. And Xenia Mendez. And I'm talking to this lady and I'm burdened to tell her about Jesus Christ because every day I go until somebody prays to receive Christ. And I said, this is the lady. And I started to tell her and I didn't know how she was looking at me. And then I saw the tears begin to drop out of her eyes when I told her about Jesus and how much He loved us. I asked her how you'd get into heaven. She said, well, by keeping the rules. We got to keep the rules. I said, but you haven't kept the rules, have you, Xenia? Nope. And I haven't either. And that's why Jesus came, to keep it for us, and to die, and to pay for our sin, and to offer us a free gift. And the tears began to come down her eyes. And then she was crying, and she started to pray to receive Christ, and she couldn't even get the words out. She was crying so much. And I said, you remind me of a lady named Awilda in our church. You remind me of Awilda. And how Awilda had prayed to receive Christ. When I was talking to her, trusted Christ and saw the love of God. She'd been brought up in a church with the rules and keeping the rules and being a good girl. But that doesn't get you there. And then she saw the love of Christ. I felt my weakness that morning. How am I going to convince people? I don't feel it. I'm weak. But listen, it's not up to me. It's the Holy Spirit. I just have to be yielded to say, Holy Spirit, I'll go. I'll let you let me feel my weakness. I'll put myself out there. Where I may have financial need, I'll put myself out there. Where I may have physical need, I'll put myself out there. Where I may have emotional need, I'll put myself out there. Because that is living. That is living. What is living? What is life? It's to know Jesus Christ. Not just in the power of His resurrection, but in the fellowship or the partnership of His suffering. Like Brainerd, he was led by the Spirit, listen to me, beloved, into a place of weakness. He died in weakness. But that was God's will. He yielded himself to feel his weakness. And they took him and they had their way with him, so to speak. And he kept doing that right up until death, as Brainerd kept doing it until death. But then God raised him from the dead. And I have known the power of God in my life, but only when I know my weakness. And I yield to Him to be in that place of weakness. And that's what you need today as well. Let me just say this in closing. That's how I started this Christian life. When I was 17, I sought to show God my power. I sought to show God that I'm good enough to go to heaven. I had hoped He would say, yes, Randy, you're good enough. And I looked into the words of Jesus and He said, you're not good enough. Your thoughts are sinful. Even if you never cursed, and I never did curse or say God's name in vain because I knew that would send me to hell. But what about being angry with somebody in your heart? What about looking at a woman to lust after her, committing adultery in your heart? Now, I realize my weakness. I realize that I'm going to go to hell. And what did I do? I just went to God like I was and said, God, I don't have anything to give you. And that's when God gave me the gospel and gave me the understanding to believe it. And the rest is history. You need that too. If you're not saved, you need that. If you are saved, you need to yield to God. Let's bow for prayer. Every head bowed, every eye closed. I wonder if you could say, Pastor, I've had that time in my life when God showed me my weakness, my inability to impress him with my goodness, and I realized I was